Blog Talk Radio.
Peter Pettigrew picked up.
3 minutes, 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ah, nothing like recycling this bad boy. Good evening, welcome to Erie House. No, it's regular Erie House Radio tonight. Yes, it is. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Ty Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and also chiming in...
Greetings and solicitations, T-minus and counting, this is CW, ready at the launch pad.
Excellent. And, of course, we also have...
It is I,
Gargoyle. You're not done.
You've got to cluck in, don't you?
Say it. You must have a blah, blah after you say
blah, blah.
Thank you. I feel better.
Label to you, sir.
Good old Bob and Bugs Bane in the chat. Good evening. Thanks for joining us for a very special tribute to James Tiptree. This particular program was suggested by our very own CW. So you get
yes,
to tell
indeed.
Us all about James, who is Alice, who is the author of
yes.
the story that we're going to hear tonight, a radio adaptation of the story.
Absolutely. This is by Alice Bradley Shelton, born in 1915 in Chicago of Illinois. She was a painter, a military intel officer, a CIA agent, an experimental psychologist, every person. Oh, yeah. And she came into sci-fi writing around 1967. And the reason she took on the name of James Tiptree Jr. was she, all the other pen names, which were female, were a little less than successful. So she came up with James. Junior was her husband's suggestion, and Tiptree was the name of a rather popular marmalade at that particular point in time. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and she, he or she, got some good acclaim, too, with her the writings. Our story tonight was a novella that first appeared in an anthology called Aurora Beyond Equality, published by Fawcett in 1976.
Indeed. And another reason she took on pen names was because she had her doctorate in psychology. She wanted to protect her reputation in academia. She didn't want to be known as one of them their weird sci-fi writers. You know, right up there with that the Ray Bradbury fella and that other weird fella, what's his name, Dr. Isaac Asimov.
Yep. Long time ago on a show with Dave and I did, we talked about how science fiction was really until you got motion pictures like 2001, A Space Odyssey, the makeup effects and Planet of the Apes, the late 60s, early 70s, sci-fi was not getting a lot of respect. Not
even Dr. Isaac Asimov wrote under the pen name Paul French for a while before things started getting a little bit more sane and more respectful towards
yep.
people who wrote that genre. Exactly.
And it's so weird. It's not like Buck Rogers, you know, they were all Buck Rogers. No, these are stories with true messages behind them and you know, we look to science fiction today, you know, you look at all the things that we came out of Star Trek that seem to have happened or are happening today. And, I mean, Lost in Space and the fun stuff they had there. So it's hard to believe that people thought nothing of science fiction writers. But even into the, you know, really into the late 40s before they really started gaining any kind of respect.
Yeah, it was always, it's just in those pulp magazines, you know, and people didn't take it really very seriously. you could tell even by the very few science fiction movies until the 50s, where you started getting into problems with nuclear power and also with the release of the energy that created every monster that came out of the 50s was radiation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Big
yeah.
bugs, big
yeah.
rabbits, everything.
Rabbits, yeah, Night of the Lepus, you know, frogs,
yep.
the ants, everything in the animal kingdom's after you.
Yeah, watch me pull a rabbit out of that hat. Woo,
there you go.
Okay. I will say, I think, yeah, and later on, I think what was one of the very first ones, it was a silent film called Are You, about a robot.
Are You Are? Yeah.
Yes.
Are You Are?
Thank you. Yeah, which stands for something that I can't really remember offhand. Sorry about that. Look it up in the search engines, folks. But, yeah, that's sci-fi. That was the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparent of Skynet, Terminator, Colossus, the Forbin Project, and all the other crazy mechanics that are trying to kill us off now.
Yeah. Yeah, you did in the 20s. You had a little bit of science fiction. There was a Russian film called Alita, which is Flight to Mars. And then, of course, Metropolis.
Absolutely. The Grand Dame.
Yep.
Man on the Moon, first Man on the Moon, wasn't that about 1902?
George Méliès.
The French film?
Or me,
yes.
George Méliès, yeah.
You know, so... that had some
good
cool
stuff.
Things in it, so yeah.
But then
definitely.
Cooled off for a while. You didn't see much in the 30s, the 40s. There were science fiction aspects to, like, Frankenstein, but not true, pure sci-fi as we know it today, for sure, until the 50s started.
About the 40s and 50s.
And then, as you know, CW brought up with James Chitree / Alice Sheldon, the difficulty, that she had to use
absolutely.
That nom de plume.
Yeah,
the nom de plume, exactly.
Most of the writers didn't get the respect. And
exactly.
Some very interesting tales were written. But I think the 50s certainly opened the doors for that. And you know what? Radio did its job to help, too, with a lot of bringing in every network had some kind of series that was science fiction.
Yes.
And
good old Bob.
They worked on some were all original stories. And yeah, okay, go ahead.
Oh, good old Bob informed us RUR stands for Rostrum's Universal Robots. There you go.
Thank you, little Bob. That's it.
There is a well-read silent film guy right there. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm hoping to start hosting films again, and I want to get into silence because very few people are doing them. So that'll be fun.
And James Tiptree's first published short story was called Birth of a Salesman, March 1968, in an
Birth
issue
of
Analog. Exactly.
I love it.
Birth of a Salesman. Very good.
It was in Analog Science, Fact and Fiction, edited by the great John W. Campbell.
Yep.
Oh,
our story. Our story tonight won a Nebula Award for Best Novella in 1976, and a much coveted Hugo Award for Best Novella. In 1977, and this version is from Science Fiction Theater. Yes, Dave?
Sci-Fi Theater, yeah. And
Sci-fi
it comes
theater.
To us from February 11th of 1990.
As man explores space, what changes may take place back on his home planet? James Tiptree Jr. offers one possibility. In Houston, Houston, do you read?
Houston, Houston, do you read? Houston, this is Sunbird. Sunbird calling Houston. Houston, do you read? Come in, Houston.
Mike ain't shot. That's why we can't hear them.
No way. Doc's checked it out. Still too much interference from the sun. Isn't that right, Doc?
Repeated conversation. Rote. The silent radio demands an answer. Rational response to an irrational situation. I have no answer. A circuit of the sun then cleared. We should have received Earth days ago, but nothing. No sound but static. As scientists, I calm them, repeating platitudes which do not fit.
The residual radiation from the flare is just about in line with us. They could have a hard time sorting us out.
You know, we're already outside Mercury. Houston should be broadcasting by now, even if they have heard us.
Give it another 24 hours.
And another. Damn. Houston, Sunbird to Houston. Sunbird to Houston.
But how many times have I told
maybe
you?
Maybe that flare just fried our antenna.
Leave the receiver on.
Judy.
We could...
Judy?
What's that?
Marco, I'm so glad we got you. What are you doing on this band?
We read you. This is Mission Sunbird calling Houston. Sunbird 1 calling Houston Ground Control. Identify, who are you? Can you relay our signal? Over.
Some skip. A damn operator with an incredible skip.
Are you in trouble, Judy? I can't hear. You sound terrible.
This is NASA Mission Sunbird 1. Mission Sunbird calling Houston Space Center. Are you DXing our channel? Identify. Repeat. Identify yourself and say if you can relay to Houston. Over.
Bingo, Judy. Try it again.
Ma'am? Can't. Get level and bearing on that transmission. You are intercepting official traffic from the United States Space Mission to Houston Control. If you cannot relay to Houston, then get off the air.
You still sound terrible. What's Houston? Who's that talking anyway? You know we don't have much time.
Jesus, that's close. There, it's pegging the dot.
A bogey, somebody else out there.
Hello? We have you now. Why are you so far out? Are you Dinko? Did you catch the flare?
All right, it's about 300,000 kilometers, guesstimated, possibly headed away around the sun. It could be cosmonauts, maybe? A Soviet mission?
Out to beat us? They missed.
Where the girls?
Well, they've done that before. But you taping this, bud?
Roger. It sure doesn't sound like a rusty chick. Who the hell's Judy?
This is Major Norman Davis, commanding in the United States spacecraft Sunbird 1. Request you identify yourself. Repeat, who are you? Over.
Judy, quit joking. We're going to lose you in a minute. Now, don't you realize that we've been worried about you?
Sunbird to unidentified craft, this is not Judy. I say again, this is not Judy. Who are you? Over.
What the... Wait a minute, Margo. This is Judy Paris and Gloria. What's going on here?
This is Major Davis, commanding United States mission Sunbird on course for Earth. We do not recognize any spacecraft, Gloria. Will you identify yourself? Over.
We just did. There is no spacecraft Sunbird, and you're not on course for Earth. If this is an Andy joke, it isn't any good.
This is no joke, madam. This is the American Circumsolar Mission, and we are American astronauts. We do not appreciate your interference. Out.
Gloria. Jan recalls reading records of a Sunbird program back at the turn of the millennium. Sunbird 1 disappeared in 1998.
Major Davis, did I hear you say you were on course for Earth?
Affirmative.
Our readings indicate you won't node with anything on your present course. Where do you see Earth now? Not coordinates. Give us the constellation.
Doc, you take the mic.
Earth's apparent position should be Pisces, approximately 3 degrees from Gamma Piscium.
It's not. Can't you see it's in Virgo?
Well, we've sustained some shell damage. The windows are glazed from the flare eruption, but we know the relative direction of Earth on October 19th. It's in Pisces.
October? It's March. March 15th. You must have... March...
Electromagnetic thrust. Listen.
Passed through a magnetic wave which deflected you through a time distortion. We will be coming... coming up behind you after our transit. Now, you stay on this band. Try to communicate with our base if you can. Your signal will enable them to reach you back.
Put it on auto scan, Doc. All frequencies. Remember that one we pulled on old Howie?
Listen, guys, I don't think it's a joke. There's no way to jimmy those transmission bearings. No way at all.
Sounded Australian. Now, we had some Aussie bunnies at Hickam. Australia. Hoo-wee. They suppose Mubara is sending up some kind of combined do with someone?
They have no capability whatsoever.
We ran into some fairly strange phenomenon during that flyby, Dave. Well, there could have been more to that flare that came up at us other than just radiation. I'm beginning to wish we could do a visual check.
Did you goof on your navigation, Doc?
Nothing to goof. The whole trajectory is pre-programmed. No. Earth is where I said it is, if it's October. But, well, Virgo is where it would appear in March.
Do an EVA?
Still too much background radiation to risk it. I've got both their transmission bearings, though. Look. Let me deploy the nav scope and double-check the gyros. It'll take just a little time.
Now we got that. Go ahead, Doc. Run the program.
Okay, now, here, look at the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You see that mag 4 just off center?
Yeah.
That's Beta Piscean, right where it should be, okay? And see the circlet just off to its side?
Mm-hmm.
But we should be able to see Earth at this magnification right about here, big and full. No Earth, no full moon.
You sure? Well, maybe that's not Beta Piscean.
Checks three ways, Dave. No deviation on the gyros. It looks right, and the spectrometer matches spike for spike. That's Beta, all right. And the radio signals we got. The farther transmission originates 149 degrees from our trajectory, right in the middle of Virgo, where they said Earth was.
Virgo.
Mark. It can't be March.
We went through some wild stuff back there. I mean, dipping through that flare. Maybe we...
What did you say, Margo? Glory over.
Hey, that's a new frequency.
We've caught enough to do a triangulation on the location of the other craft. The transmissions originated outside your orbit. Why don't you use your high-mag mapping camera to run a search around Beta area?
Will do.
Doc, where's that coming from?
Behind us. Close to Venus.
We've got something, Margo, but it's so small. How can anyone live in there?
Hey, that's Judy. Dave, this is screwy. It's all in English. It's the ESA project, maybe Aryan.
Judy, listen up. While you were off contact, Jan looked up that history. Now, there were three people on the Sunbird flight. A Major Norman Davis. A Major was just a military title. And then they said Doc. There was a scientific officer on board, Dr. Orrin Lorimer. Now, the third was a captain, but that's just another title. Bernhard Gehr. There were just the three, and all males, of course. The vessel had an early reaction engine and limited fuel. The point is, the mission was lost. Everything was fine until they went out of transmission range around the sun. Then they never reappeared. Now, that was about the time the first big solar flare started. Now, Jan thinks they must have been close to one. The transmission mentioned skin damage.
Never reappeared.
Jan says that maybe the disruption in those super flares could collapse the local time dimension. Why don't you have Andy run that through with your new data and see if you agree?
It could confirm Francis' theory that our system is passing through a micro black hole cluster. The resultant time disruption could be explained.
Friends, who's friends?
Well, it's hard to imagine, but the theory works. And they're there. I mean, 0.3 megacaves outside you and scooting towards Aldebaran. They're in big trouble if they don't have a lot of power to spare. Well, we'll go back to the original frequency and try to talk to them.
Well, Doc, were we in a black hole?
Well, not in one, or we wouldn't be here if we are here. But we could have passed...
Calling Sunbird 1. This is Luna Central calling Major Norman Davis. We're very puzzled as to who you are and how you got into your present position. If you really are Sunbird 1, we think you must have skipped forward in time when you passed through some sort of a gravitational phenomenon. Over.
Aren't you going to answer? Can this be? Look at the source bearing, Dave. If that's coming from the Earth or the Moon, this has to be March.
Calling Sunbird 1, we think you may have a serious course problem. Repeat, you have a serious course problem. You are headed for October position for Earth. It is not, repeat, not October. Current Earth date is March 15th. Time, 2000 hours. Over.
It is not possible.
It checks on radio bearings. I cannot imagine anyone going to this much expense and trouble for a practice.
Sunbird, you said your course is damaged. Can't you go out and look? If we're right, you have to make a major course correction. And the sooner the better. Do you have enough fuel? Can we help you with the computer plot analysis? Sunbird, please come in.
Aren't you going to answer? Don't be stupid. Dave, 149 degrees is the difference between Gamma Piscium and Spica. The transmission is coming from where they say Earth is.
You goof. You and your heathen computers and your... You goof.
I did not goof. Now it has to be March.
This is insane. It's some trick. Some goddamn trick.
Bud, don't you ever talk
Dave,
like
Dave, that. Dave, Dave. Now look, our antenna is pointed straight at Spica. Now, I don't care if you think I goofed. If Earth is over there, we have to change our course. And soon, all right? At least rotate the ship so we can try to spot it in the nav scope. If Earth's there, we can see it.
Oh, they don't answer. You want to try it?
Back on the other frequency again. Let's make it private.
All right, Margo. Sight, listen, we've been thinking. If these people really are from the past, this must be very traumatic for them. They could just be realizing that they'll never see their world again.
That's right. Maida says these males probably had children and women they lived with. They'll be missing them terribly. You know, this is exciting for us, but maybe incredibly frightening for them. Maybe they think that we're aliens or hallucinations.
Agreed, Margo. We were discussing that, too. Going back over to that frequency, out. Sunbird, are you there? Major Davis of Sunbird, this is Judy Paris of the ship Gloria. Can you respond? Please reply if you possibly can.
Yep, I remember Abbott and Costello movie like this.
So this is an advert for rabbit ears, right?
This one's going to end a little different, I think.
I think this one's a little different than... Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going to get a very interesting surprise.
Yes. And so will you. Stick around.
Oh, yes.
Keep you on the edge of your chair if you're standing
up. Do any
of
you folks have rabbit ears on your TV?
I have an outdoor antenna up in my attic, which I hooked up to my TV, but not rabbit ears.
No, yeah. I once made an ad hoc Wi-Fi antenna with foil and a strainer.
Tin foil?
and a strainer.
She couldn't get channel 23 very well, but man, could she fry an egg.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Actually, it was channel 23 and a half.
Interesting story here already, and all kinds of elements of science fiction going on, not just only in the space, but time jumping and far more to come.
Yes.
Stay tuned because it gets better and better and better and a little scarier too.
Yep. Don't forget, right after our show,
I think it's very
8:00.
Interesting because although, oh, okay.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, don't forget, after our show at 8 o'clock, it's Horrible Horror, starring Gargoyle. Gargoyle. I had to remember.
I was just thinking, you know, the first time I heard this, it was even before CW mentioned it, and I had not plugged it together. I did not know that this was, but there are some interesting aspects on here in the show, especially more coming up, that I'd never thought about, and it would it doesn't surprise me now thinking about it, that it was written by a woman, because there are aspects that are more of a female look at things.
Yes,
and I think it makes it interesting. Just like in Sliders itself, the series TV Sliders, Tracy Torme, Mel Torme's daughter, was a creator producer of that series. And so it always made some different things interesting than when the guys just sit down there and do the sci-fi.
I just like the little hamburgers.
No. Not that kind of Sliders. No.
Okay. Different.
The Jerry O'Connell series, yes.
Ah,
yes.
That is different.
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't go as well with ketchup, though, but I digress. And actually, Tracy Torme, I think, is a guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know.
Who knew?
Who knew? Well, hopefully Mel knew.
I thought it would be his daughter, but okay.
Tracy.
But speaking of girl power, there's a wonderful quote about Tiptree's work by Ursula K. Le Guin, another high-powered sci-fi writer of the femme fatale set. She said, quote, Tiptree's work is proof of what she said, that men and women can and do speak both to and for one another if they bother to learn how.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, zinger.
There's a good quote from Alice. I lost it. I'm going to have to find it. A very good quote. We'll get into that after part two. Of Houston,
yes.
Do you read me? From Sci-Fi Radio.
Can you respond? Please reply if you possibly can.
Come on, Dave. Do something.
Sunbird, please don't be frightened. We're people just like you. We want to help. Respond, please. Margo, they won't peep. Maybe they're dead. Maybe they're aliens.
Judy, had another thought. These people had a very rigid authority code. You remember your history. They peck ordered everything. You remember Major Davis repeated about commanding. That's called dominant submission structure. He apparently gives orders, and the others do whatever they're told. And we don't quite know why, but the point is, if Major Davis is in shock or panic, maybe the others can't reply unless he lets them.
Margo, we're losing your transmission. Another EM pump.
Come on, Dave. At least rotate the ship so we can try to spot Earth with the nav scope. Or respond. For Christ's sakes, do something before we lose them.
I will allow no profanity aboard this ship.
It's an archaic dominant command structure. The secondary crew member would, by training, submit to the leader, no matter what the danger.
How sweet. But don't they know they're on a bad course? I mean, could the dominant one really lead them right out of the system?
Hey-ho. Let's see if we take a look. How much fuel it takes to do a quick rotate and get that scope around. First, Curtis.
Oh. Yeah, I guess. Doc, what's the pitch bank on the bearing angle?
Try 83 degrees.
Gotcha. Bud, give me 12 points positive pitch, nose attitude, one positive bank. Manual on the burn. Ready?
Roger.
Here we go.
Thank you.
gyro.
2 degrees, 5, 20, 15, 10, 5, 3, 1, 0.
Any swing?
No.
Back off from the magnification.
All right.
There. That right mag one. Now this center in. Zoom. Got it. Now look. That's it. There's the moon. They're both almost full from this angle.
Whew, there she is, all right. Hey, Dave, look at that.
You sure it's Spica?
Nothing that bright anywhere near Pisces, but let me run it through the spectrometer and confirm. Yeah, see that blue peak? That's Spica, all right.
Houston, Sunbird to Houston. Sunbird calling Houston. Come in.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Calling Major Davis in Sunbird. This is Luna Central. We are the service and communication facility for spaceflight now. We're sorry to have to tell you that there is no space center at Houston anymore. Houston itself was abandoned when the shuttle base moved to White Sands over 2 centuries ago.
Dave, take the mic. Talk to him, Dave.
Sunbird to Luna Control. Central, we copy. We have no immediate problems, but we cannot sustain life support for more than 3 months. Now, we copy the course change suggestion and appreciate your offer of computer assistance. Please transmit position data so we can get squared away. Considering the situation, we are economizing on transmission power. We'll sign on again in 30 minutes for response. Over. Power down. Terminate any unnecessary power drains.
Yes, sir.
Heaters down.
Sunbird, this is Gloria.
Gloria, Sunbird here. Any suggestions on the navigation problem?
Sunbird, negative. We see 3 options regarding your present trajectory and fuel reserve. A close flyby of Venus is in your capabilities, but its gravity won't give you quite enough acceleration to catch Earth, and your present course takes you totally out of reach. The only other option would be an Oolage maneuver, killing your velocity so that Earth would cut you on your next orbit. Is that viable?
Negative. Negative, Gloria. Life support systems will not maintain for that length of time.
Elaborate, Sunbird. We do not understand.
Gloria, our oxygen supplies will hold out only another 3 months. Food and water about the same. We cannot survive for another orbit of Earth.
Explain, Sunbird. Are your greenhouses damaged?
We have no greenhouses, Gloria.
Please stand by.
What was that about?
Gloria must have operated with renewable systems somehow. Greenhouses to consume CO2 and give off oxygen.
Well, all they'd have to worry about would be food.
No. The greenhouses would provide that as well. Don't you see vegetables, fruit, even meat or fish if they use the produce for fodder?
Imagine fresh meat. Oh, when we get this baby back, Stars ain't going to study old buddy no more. A nice beach, about a zillion steaks and ale and all the sweet things. Hey, y'all notice the voices we hear? They're all women.
Well, now they mentioned someone named Andy, too. Well,
there were girls training when we went up.
Well, yeah. I mean, space is safe now. The girlies have taken over. Let them sweat their cute little buns off. Freeze us for the serious work.
Sunbird, sorry. We've been looking at other options, considering your limitations. Give us some time to work out the trajectory.
Any hope?
Yeah, possibilities. Wait until we work it out. You do have EVI capability, don't you?
Affirmative, Gloria.
Good. Oh, and Sunbird, Earth has compiled a history for you. Luna's ready to pass it on. Go ahead, Margot.
Thanks, Gloria. Sunbird, this is Luna. It's been difficult because nobody here really does history anymore. But we've got some main points you might find interesting. Okay, let's see. probably the most important is that there aren't as many people as you had. We're just over 2 million.
2 million? There were 8 billion people on Earth.
There was a world epidemic not long after your time. It didn't really kill people, but it reduced the population. I mean, there weren't any babies in most of the world. Sterility, you know. The country called Australia was affected least.
Told you she sounded like an Aussie.
Quiet.
And North Canada wasn't too bad. So the survivors all got together in the south part of the American states where they could grow food and where the best communications and factories were. Nobody lives in the rest of the world. Okay, what we do? We have 5 main activities. Was industries the word? Well, food. That's farming and fishing. Communications, transport and space, and that's us. Gloria's out on a flyby of the 2 inner planets, and that's how she happens to be in your neighborhood. Oh, and you'd be interested to know that we use Zeppelins for travel, just like you did. We have 6 big ones. Now, then there are the factories. We live a lot simpler than you did, I think. The 5th activity is the children. Babies.
Whew. 2 million people and space capabilities. Man, that is incredible.
There's a lot they're not telling us. Thanks for the history lesson, Luna. We really appreciate it, but we can't figure out how you could maintain a space program with only a couple million people.
Sunbird, yes, I would have thought that you'd want to know about space. Well, we only have 4 real spaceships and 1 building. 2 are on the Mars run now. Maybe the Mars Dome was since your day. You had the old satellite stations, though, didn't you? And the old Luna Dome? You know, we owe a lot to you, really. You men, I mean.
Are you hearing what I'm hearing?
Not one word about their government. Not a word about economic conditions. We're talking to a bunch of monkeys. Luna, Margot, who's your president?
President? Oh, you mean like queens and kings? No, we realize you had a very complex government, but with so few people, we don't have that type of formal structure at all. Our communications are good, and everyone is kept informed. The people in each activity are in charge of doing it while they're there.
What do you mean, while they're there?
Well, we rotate, mostly in 5-year hitches. I used to be on the Zeppelins and such. We all work, and things are basically more stable now, I gather. But we can't, take you to our leader, if that's what you mean. Oh, just an old joke. We make a big effort not to let the language drift.
Margot, have an update on the problem, if we can interrupt.
Go ahead.
Sunbird, this is Gloria. Listen, we've been figuring. We think if you use all your fuel, you could come back in close enough to our orbit so we could swing out and pick you up. We can't march exactly, but you have suits and some kind of propellants, don't you? I mean, you could fly across a few kais.
That's a good thought, Gloria. Have you cleared this with Luna?
What? It's our business. We'd only miss another look at Venus. Who cares? We have plenty of food and water, and if the air gets smelly, we can stand it.
Hey, these chicks are all right.
We've been looking at that, too, Judy. We're not sure you understand the risk. Sunbird, excuse me. Judy, if you manage to pick them up, you'll have to spend nearly a year in the ship with these male creatures from a very different culture. Jan says you should remember history, and it's a risk, no matter what Connie says. Sorry, Sunbird. Hate to be so rude. Over.
Afraid all the little girls will come back knocked up, huh?
Margot, they're all human beings. It isn't just Connie. We're all agreed. And Andy and Lady Blue think it would be very interesting. And we can't let them go without trying.
We understand. But there's another problem. They could be carrying diseases. Sunbird, I know you've been isolated for 14 months, but you could be carrying something dormant that isn't even around anymore. Maybe some of ours could harm you, too.
We thought of that, too, Margot. Look, if you have contact with them at all, somebody has to test. True, we're ideal. By the time we get home, you'll know. And how could we get sick so fast we couldn't put Gloria in a stable recovery orbit?
And what about that epidemic they've had down there? I'm not sure I want to risk losing the family, too.
You'd rather stay out here?
Sunbird, our health person thinks that what we have to fear most is the meningitis influenza complex. They mutate so quickly. But if Gloria's willing to take the risk, then they're welcome to give it a try.
Roger. Thank you. By the way, as to your concerns about our behavior, I want to inform you that at the time of takeoff, the incidence of rape in the United States Space Cadre was 0.00.
I guarantee the conduct of my crew, providing Gloria can control hers.
Roger, Sunbird. We don't anticipate any problems here. Now, if you're ready, we have some vector and thrust figures for you. The intercept should take about 40 days, but any delays will multiply. Are you ready to copy?
Ready, Gloria. Ready to copy.
Okay. At 13:46:52, do a...
The truth is coming out as to what happened in the world while they were gone or moving across time.
Yes. I like the fact that they had, at that particular point in time, they had the population when the astronauts, the guys left, 8 billion, which is where we're standing at as we speak.
Yeah. For now, it's early.
Yeah, the day's not over yet, so, you know.
Anything could happen. That guy in Russia could lose his mind, that would be it. But anyway, something to look forward to.
Keep a good thought. Keep a good thought.
Yeah, keeping good thoughts. Yeah. Always keeping happy thoughts, that's me.
Yeah, my money is on the guy in North Korea. I'm saying, let's play bets. Who is it, the Ruski or the North Korean? Come on, take your bets. Take your bets. Bets.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be over in a flash. Literally. This is a good story. Houston, do we need by James Tintry.
Yeah, I love the...
It's nice because even a lot of the stuff we had in the 50s that we listened to here on Area House, this has a distinctly far more modern feel to it.
It does.
And Dave informs me we're going to revisit this radio program again. We found something cool for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Or Dave found something cool for us, so...
We won't spill the beans about it yet, but
there was a movie based on it. Let's just say that. Cool movie.
Ooh. Yum. Yummy, side. Yummy.
Bye. Yep. And we might as well get back to Houston, do you read me? Part 3 of 4. We'll be back.
As their craft drifts on toward rendezvous and rescue, the men of Sunbird anticipate the potential of this brave new world into which they have been strangely transported.
Major Davis, it should be in the entry in about a minute. We're opening the airlock. It's rotating into your view now between the two largest bars. Adjust your angle and speed as you see fit.
Inside. Correcting and braking.
Andy Kay, leave the camera for now and help them at the airlock. The automatic recorders will get everything that we need for the study. Watch and tell me when they're clear of the door.
Approaching. One has a handhold. He's pulling in. Oh, there's the second. Third's in and looks clear now. Oh, wait. There's a container with them. Personal belongings and records, I guess. It's in. Close the lock.
I'll get it. Andy, perhaps you'd better help them out of their suits.
Thanks. Helmet first.
Good air in here. You must be the commanding officer. I'm Major Norman Davis,
This is Captain Bud Gehr, and that's Doc Lorimer. Pleased to meet you.
And I. But you're mistaken. No one here commands in your sense.
Hmm?
I'm just the oldest. This is Connie. Judy's you've been talking to. Judy Paris and Judy Dakar.
Hello. Nice to meet you at last.
And Andy Kay.
A little young for space service, aren't you, kid? You're not even shaving yet.
The whole ship's a greenhouse. Look at those vines.
Oh, we let them grow where they want. Just trim them back if they begin to interfere.
Grasshoppers? Good God, I just saw a grasshopper.
The chickens eat them. And crickets and the seeds, of course. The iguanas mostly eat the vine tips. Keeps the growth down.
Chickens. Just eggs, or do you eat the chickens?
We eat them. They're better than iguana, I think. With this much light, we could keep a goat, don't you expect? You don't have any life at all on your ship, crew?
No, not a single iguana.
But they promised us a Shetland pony for Christmas.
We've got to get back to the course changes now you're in. Oh, come on then. Let me show you around. Did you bring some clothes?
No.
Well, no problem. We've plenty of robes. They should do you.
Yes, and you could all use something to eat, I expect. Then you'll probably want to rest. We've cleaned out some cubbies for you.
I'll show them, Connie. Come this way. We'll get you comfortable.
Comfortable. The robes. Was I talking aloud? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be. I like to listen. It's a Connie trait. It's so sad to hear about your wife and your children. They must have been wonderful people.
What else have I said? It's the drug. You're drugging us. We've been on Gloria 4 months. Why are you drugging us now?
Oh, it's all right, truly. We all use it when we need to explore something. Usually it's pleasant, a disinhibitor, like alcohol, but somewhat more so, and it doesn't discoordinate you. We'll be arriving at Earth orbit soon, you see, and we have the responsibility to understand you men. But you're all so inhibited, locked in. It's been so hard for us to really learn about you. You just don't let your feelings out.
Oh.
Well, you don't feel sick, do you? We have the antidote.
No. We're not locked in. It's just that we only talk when we have something to say, not like you. You talk of everything.
Well, it's natural to share.
Natural like ants. Talk, twiddle, like ants. They twiddle their antennas when they meet. Or bees dancing, twiddle, like women.
Ants, bees? You truly see us as insects, don't you? Well, because they're female.
You don't hold it in. See, we talk, but only when we have something to say. Otherwise, it would all break down, all the structure, the order of things. Break down. Calm is... the drug, oh.
Yes, it releases you. Lets us know what you're really thinking. What men are really like, inside. Frees you to express your deep thoughts.
The deep. But there are monsters in the deep, dark heart. Pretty. Yes, Judy. Paris, pretty legs. Soft, hot skin. I think of Judy. Oh, Judy. Robe open, smooth, curved shirt. Belt silk and soft. Wrists tied, open, waiting. Take the ship. We could take it, you know. Take it all. It's ours.
Take some more. No secrets.
I'm talking again. Where's Dave? Bud, where's Bud?
More juice, there. Have some more juice and relax. think? Tell me more. What about us? What do you men think about us?
Think? Oh, no. I know. Not Bud and Davis doesn't realize what it is, but I know. 4 months. 4 months and the threads unravel. At first it was little things. A word omitted or a sentence unfinished. A glance between duties. And then I started watching. Looking for the patterns. Something missing. Something wrong. Something big. Like space, too big to see. I know. What do you think about Gloria's crew?
Not what they look like or how they dress, but what they are.
Oh, I think they're okay.
I don't. Hide something. They're not telling us the whole story. Something's going on here. Can't you feel it?
Yeah. You notice they never talk about their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, maybe they don't have them. You ever hear them mention being married?
Come on, Doc. It's got to be the one thing on a chick's mind.
Now, wait a minute. In this much time, the social mores are bound to have changed. Now, obviously, you have the woman doing more work, for one thing, but they have family bonds, that's for sure. Look, Lady Blue, for instance. She has a sister in an aluminum mill and another in health. And Connie has a brother. I think he's on the fishing fleet in Biloxi. That's what she said.
So much is missing. Marriage, love affairs, children's troubles, jealousy, sickness, money problems. They just don't discuss them. I mean, all the trivial daily things that occupied our wives. It's as if it's been sifted out, edited. It doesn't exist.
They all talk about their sisters.
Dagmar, you'd like her, Lorimer. But she has this tendency to organize everything.
Dagmar, the one who invented the chess open.
Mm-hmm. Dagmar's smart.
Dagmar Gold?
Oh.
Well, Lady Blue told me the gambit was developed a century ago.
Oh, no. Her sister.
A sister? 100 years apart?
A daughter. A granddaughter.
Clones. You two aren't sisters. You're clones.
Clones. Well, yes. We call it sisters. Oh, Mother, we weren't supposed to tell you. Lady Blue said you'd be frightfully upset with us.
I'll keep your secret, but answer some questions for me. How many are there? I mean, how many Judys and Connies and how many Andy Kays?
200 of us. About the same in Connies, I expect. Of course, they're less of Andy Kay. But you're all alone. No sisters to share with. No name, history. Well, you just have to blunder through by yourself and die, all for nothing.
But how?
A somatic cell nucleus is isolated and inserted in our nucleated ovum, then re-implanted. We're truly mothers. We both had two. We nursed them in the creche till they were old enough. Our youngest Judy is just 6 now. I'll see them soon, both. They'll have grown, of course, but, well...
Judy's will talk. Well... You would have known eventually.
And Andy. I guess that too, you know. Steroid treatments in the womb. Produces an androgyne. She looks male, has the strength. But really, she's...
Yes. We need the muscle power for some jobs, a few. Gays are quite strong anyway. Well, I guess I'm glad you know.
It's been such a strain.
So evolution ends.
No, no, why? It's just slowed down. We do everything much slower than you did. We like to experience things fully. See, we have time. We live longer. Connie's ages, for instance, tend to average about 100 years. 108, that was Connie Eagle. She's our record. But she was pretty blah at the end.
But no new genotypes.
Oh, but there are now. Last century, they worked out the way to make haploid nuclei combine. We can make a stripped egg cell function as pollen. What was the old word? Sperm. Well, it's tricky. Some don't come out too well, but now that we're finding both X's viable, we can have over 100 new types started. Of course, it's hard for them, with no sisters. The donors try to help.
Both X's viable. Then it was a gene or genes on the X chromosome that was damaged during the plague. My God, there would have been no births.
A few men were unaffected, but you're right. The X chromosome was damaged by the disease, but not the Y, and the damage was recessive.
Those men mated, but only their daughters with the dominant unaffected X paired with one of the damaged but recessive X chromosomes from their mother could survive. Boys with their father's Y and damaged X never survived to birth.
That's right.
No boys. A planet of girls and dying men. Few odd viables dying off.
You truly do understand, don't you?
So we'll be perfectly safe on Earth, then. In theory, we can marry again. Have families. Children. And daughters, anyway.
In theory.
You think so, huh, buddy?
In theory.
Yeah. Is that what you think is going to happen? Wait a minute. It's not funny. It's kind of frightening.
Oh, my. But, yeah, I am enjoying this. It's just getting more, not just sci-fi, but very insidious. So that's really making it all the more tasty.
Yes. Insidious.
Yeah,
I like that word.
It really gives you such, you know, and believe me, I love the 50 science fiction, the X-1s, dimensions, X's, and exploring tomorrow, things like that. But this gives you really such a better modern feel of Even of the people's characters and such.
Yeah.
It does. You can really, you can still relate to the older radio shows from the 30s, 40s, and 50s,
yes.
Et cetera, et cetera. But this is, you know, being the date that it is,
right.
Really, it has that different flavor to it. Plus the fact when they were mentioning how babies were born in a creche. If anyone caught that.
I didn't quite hear it clearly, so I didn't really fully understand it.
I'm wondering if James Tiptree took a little something-something from Robert Heinlein, because in his Lazarus Long series and a few other of his books, he mentions how people have that sort of... You still have... The usual relationships, more or less, but children are born in or cared for in creches. I'm just wondering.
Right. Likened to, say, B.F. Skinner, yes? The Walden
yes.
2?
You're alive!
Yeah, that.
Oh, I'm a ghoul!
Oh,
what?
It's alive! We can take care of that.
I read B.F. Skinner stuff in my early teens, and I was like, wow, because it's a whole new way to look at how to design a society that might be self-sustaining.
Yep. Yeah, everyone's had their own spin on how to do society. B.F. Skinner, H.G. Wells, and Shape of Things to Come, the Utopians, Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged.
Yep.
So, yeah, everyone's got their spin. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. You know, even Gene Roddenberry, Star Trek, you know, United Federation of Planets.
Yeah. Yep. Many theories on how to run a planet or a society.
One goof on the Star Trek thing. Where did the women end up having to wear those mini skirts? Because that was like, what?
That was
yeah.
That was one of Shatner's requirements, I think. Okay, the captain says, we got to have mini skirts, sorry.
Yeah. That was just going with the mini skirt theme of the fashion at the time. But there were at least a few, there was a few crew members that you saw in the pilot Where No Man Has Gone Before where they're wearing trousers. Sally Kemmelman. And When No Man Has Gone Before and others, they were wearing trousers. Later on, those mini skirts came on.
Well, they were also fashionable in Project UFO.
Oh, heck yeah. Oh, my God. With the purple wigs?
Purple wigs.
Are
absolutely.
Very good.
Now everybody has purple in their hair or cotton candy pink. Yeah, the person at my gas station has cotton candy pink hair. So, you know, that's totally normal. No biggie.
I guess. It is nowadays. Hey, if you like purple hair, have purple hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Go for it.
Yep.
Shall we go back to Houston?
We shall wrap up the story.
I'm on pins and needles here.
Houston, do you read me? In space!
Hey, come here, my little queen bee. Come on to daddy, Judy. Hey,
oh boy.
Make
here it goes.
Free fall, you sexy little space bunny.
Well, what's going on? That's Bud. He's with a Judy. Oh, no, you've got...
No, don't worry. Andy's with them.
Oops. Hey, this room appears to be occupied. Hello, Doc. We interrupt anything with you and Mama Connie? No, of course not. Not the noble Dr. Lorimer. Well, let me show you how a real man handles these hot little space stews.
I've got to stop him. He's not like this. Now, stop him, for God's sake.
Oh, God? No, she's a woman now, you know? Hey, where's the preacher? Where's good old Dave? Trying to convert Ms. Blue, I'll bet. Convert that ice queen into a puddle, and I'll...
You give him the antidote. Now, you don't know what he'll do. Let me up, please. Let me stop him.
And you, Andy, now listen. You're a great kid, but Sis Judy and I have some adult things to discuss. Why don't you go somewhere and get that damn camera out of my face? Here's a couple of dollars. Go see a movie.
Bud, they've drugged us. Trying to find what men are really like.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we're like. We're drones, old Doc. Except wimpy little twerps like you. Paradise full of ripe, pink, queen bees like little Judy here.
Honey, I don't like this.
Please, don't interfere.
Hey, Andy, I hear him calling you.
I don't hear.
Scoot, Andy, go on. Scat, it's New Year's Eve. Sis Judy and I got some partying to do. Happy New Year, kitten.
Happy New Year. Did you used to do special things on New Year?
Oh, did we? Oh, get me out of this damn robe. And you, Andy, I thought I told you to get lost.
Oh, I won't bother you.
Hey, this is man's business, now, boy. Do I have to spell it out for you? Now, give me that damn camera.
No.
Hey, I've had it with you, you little son of a...
Stop
it!
Bud! Stop that! You're hitting a woman!
Get lost, Doc, you little fart. You go get your own.
Andy's a girl, not a man.
Huh? What the hell are you talking about? Some kind of girl. Where are the boobs, huh? And look there. Hadn't dropped them yet, but
her name is Kay. She's an androgyne. She had male hormone treatments before she was born. It made her look male, but she's a woman.
You mean... Oh, she's got a... Oh, why?
There are no men. You imbecile, don't you get it? There are no men. None of these women has ever seen a man in her entire life. Never. We're extinct. Obsolete. Where do they get the kids? They grow them artificially. They're clones, Bud. All girls, all 2 million people. There are no men.
God. Mean it. 2 million hot little babes down there.
Film this, Andy.
And no guys
I
to
am.
Fill them up. Oh, all waiting for old Buddy. Oh, God, the last man on earth. You hear that, Sarge? Imagine. They'll be spread out for miles just begging for you. Fighting each other for it. We'll have contests. Oh. Nothing but the pick of the best.
Is he going to emit pollen now?
Very
oh, come on, Sarge. Come on, give me a... Give me a good one. Show them what you can do. They'll make statues to you. Oh, my God, they'll worship you.
Oh, can't you, Judy? Judy, save it. Save the
kids. Yeah. I said there would be no misconduct on my ship, and I mean it. Get your clothes on, you pervert. Get away from that woman. What the hell are you doing?
Giving them a sperm sample, I should think.
Warmer! Are you out of your obscene little mind? Get Captain Gurr to his quarters. Right now.
The Reverend Leroy.
You're drunk. Get to your quarters.
I have news for you, Dave-O.
I bet you don't know that we're the last men on Earth. 2 million lonely little chicks down there.
I am aware of that. Now you are a drunken disgrace. Warmer, get that man out of here.
Oh, I don't have to take that anymore. Hey, nothing counts anymore, Dave. All gone. For what? Hey, but hey, we have places to see. I mean, big spread. Hey, we can go hunting. Do things. It won't just be...
Inject the antidote, Andy.
Antidote? No. What do you mean?
I'll put this sample in the freezer for you. Good, Judy. Kay, are you all right?
Oh, I'm fine. I felt physical anger. I really wanted to hit him.
Dave, did you really know... Find out they're all women?
I always knew they were trying to deceive us. Women will. Now I understand the full extent of the tragedy. They are lost children. They have forgotten who made them. For generations they have lived in darkness.
They seem to be doing all right.
Women are not capable of running anything. You should know that, Lorimer. I mean, look what they've done here. It's pathetic. Marking time, that's all. Souls.
It's not their fault, of course. I recognize that. No one has given them guidance for 300 years. Well, the head of woman is man. Corinthians 1:11-3. I mean, look about you. They handed that poor child. Mockery. Abomination. We were sent here. This is God's plan. I was sent here. My middle name is Paul. Did you know that? Oh, God, send me strength. Send me strength to lead your erring daughters out of the darkness. And she brought forth a man-child to rule the nations with a rod of iron. Revelations 12:5. Come to me, my child. What's that for? Serpents! Jezebel, where are you? Oh, all right, there's going to be some aura around here starting right now.
What is that thing?
It is a gun, weapon, cold, survival issue. Don't you know what a firearm is, you miserable savages?
Hold it, stop, now do what he says. It can kill you. Dave, put that away. Now,
you over there with them.
Wait!
At least scares a man when he sobers up. All right, you heathens, let me demonstrate. See that lizard there?
Damage anything. Put them in the freezers. They'll be wanted for study. And Judy, remove that weapon thing.
They were good men. They aren't bad men. You don't know what bad means. You did this to them. You broke them down with your damn disinhibitor drugs. You made them do crazy things. Was it interesting? Did you learn enough? God, everybody has aggressive fantasies, but they didn't act on them. Not until you poisoned them.
No, but nobody does. The fantasies, I mean.
They were good men. We all were. We built your precious civilization and your knowledge and your comforts and your dreams, all of it. We protected you. We worked our tails off keeping you and your kids healthy and fed, and it was hard. It was a fight, a bloody fight all the way. We're tough, you see, but we had to be. Can't you understand? Can't you, for Christ's sakes, understand?
We're trying. We are trying, Dr. Lauren. Of course we enjoy your inventions, and we do appreciate your evolutionary role, but you must see there's a problem. What you protected people from was largely other males, now wasn't it? We've just had an extraordinary demonstration of that. You have brought history to life.
But it's over.
The fighting is long. It ended when you did. But think about it. We can hardly turn you loose on Earth. And we simply have no facilities for people with your emotional problems.
You could put us on an island. On three separate islands.
Poor dear. You just don't understand, do you?
Your problem is... But if you take the risk of giving us equal rights, what could we possibly contribute?
Precisely.
I see. The drug... the drug has given me a headache. I think I'd best have that antidote now.
All right, I'll get some for you.
Thank you. Just tell me what... What do you call yourselves? I mean, women's world? Liberation? Amazonia? What?
Why, we call ourselves human beings. Humanity. Mankind. The human race.
Here it is, Lorna. I've mixed it with some juice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well now, there's a cheerful ending. Thank you for turning us on to this tale, CW. This was a good one. Written by James Tiptree Jr., a.k.a. Alice Sheldon.
Absolutely. Yep, I just sort of discovered her not too long ago, and I was hoping you'd enjoy it. I was quite entranced by it. So a very worthy author of the sci-fi fantasy genre. Those awards, the Nebula and the Hugo, richly deserved.
Yes.
Yep. And our authoress tonight, Alice Sheldon, continued writing under the Tiptree pen name for another decade in the last years of her life. She suffered from depression and heart trouble, while her husband began to lose his eyesight, becoming almost completely blind in 1986. They actually ended up having a murder-suicide pact. On May 19th, 1987, she shot her husband and then herself. She telephoned her attorney after first shooting to announce her actions. They were found dead hand-in-hand in bed in their Virginia home.
Yep. That was the way she decided to go out, but don't necessarily agree with it, but I'm glad she left us a wealth of her talent to remember her by.
Yep.
Yeah.
I did find that quote that I wanted to share. I thought it was interesting. It goes like this. Being, I imagine, must be very simple. It is becoming, which is so messy, and which I am all for. James.
There you go.
Kind of thought-provoking.
Exactly. See, I was wondering, since her pen last name was after a marmalade company, you wouldn't have to have that little radio jingle that mentions your having your marmaladio with your radio. Would you?
No, I don't have it anymore.
We do. We just don't know which one it is.
No, I got rid of all of them. We don't have it anymore.
Oh, all the free birds.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure, driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio?
It's coming.
That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and marmaladio. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
Marmaladio.
Yes, Marmaladio. I'm still looking for that particular brand. Still can't find it in the Kroger.
Yes. Oh, that would be terrible to be tied down and have to share your feelings. Oh, I was having moments of horror during that section of the show. Oh.
Yeah, come on, guys. Just open up. Share your feelings. Come on, there you go.
I don't know. I'm afraid to share now. No, don't drug me. Don't drug me.
Yeah. No. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I don't want to have feelings.
Not even for a Twinkie or,
some ice cream maybe.
Yes, we have warm feelings for ice cream.
Yeah.
Yes.
We all scream for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Moose tracks ice cream, deer tracks ice cream, and the bear tracks ice cream.
With the bunny drops, that's raisins. those aren't raisins. I think that was a Big Chuck joke, wasn't it? The Easter Bunny came.
Yeah.
The Easter Bunny came. He left us some raisins. Those aren't raisins.
Can you imagine what was left over after that horror movie Night of the Lepus? Oh, the horror.
Yes. I could not bring myself to, you know, I was just getting into buying all those famous monster magazines and really getting into horror. And when they came out with Night of the Lepus, I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. I am not going to see that movie. I'm sorry. I can't do giant bunnies.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
I started becoming a bit of a highbrow with special effects because I had been so enamored of people like Willis O'Brien and Ray Harryhausen and even the people when, you know, when Star Wars came out, I was like, oh my God, special. Space travel looks real. It looks good.
Yeah, it's about time. Yeah. Well, I think everything in the animal kingdom's tried to, make us go extinct. I mean, the better of the lot was, of course, Godzilla, Hitchcock's The Birds. They were rooting for The Birds, actually, you know.
Don't forget that 70s classic Frogs.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
There's a lot of people in that movie. Sam Elliott, a very young Sam Elliott's in that, and Ray Milland is in it.
Holy
who else?
Christmas, I mean.
But Ray Milland got the point. He would do anything, I think.
He did that thing with the two-headed thing with Rosie Grier.
Oh, it was Rosie Grier. Oh, my stars.
Yes.
Oh, my.
But,
Brother from Another Planet or something like that?
Brother from Another Planet was a different movie. That was a good movie. Brother from Another Planet. That was cool. But, just to dive back into women in the sci-fi genre, you had getting more modern, J.K. Rowling.
Yes.
I guess didn't really, when Harry Potter took off, I mean, who knew?
Yeah. I was talking to Mrs. K about the genre, CW, and that you know, you were bringing this story to us. And she goes, I says, you know, and there really weren't a lot of women in sci-fi. She goes, what about Mary Shelley? I go, that's one in 200 years. Come on. Name another one.
That's pretty much it. That's there were maybe some others that we in antiquity that got left by the wayside, but that's pretty much it. I mean, when it's a sad thing. Yeah, you guys, you're always in the way. I mean, you're only good for moving furniture.
Well, somebody has to.
I don't even need you for that anymore. You've got those little things you can buy at the dollar store, those little tabs you put under the furniture. You stick those on and just slides across the room. Then you've got the Roomba that vacuums now. You got a dishwasher. Well, you know, and you can just go on YouTube and figure out how to fix the dishwasher and everything else. So, you know, you're becoming obsolete. Sorry to be the one to inform you about that, but yeah.
Obsolete again.
That's true.
Oh, well. Well, at least you can, you know, go out and buy the ice cream. Bring the ice cream home.
No, I'm depressed. I'm going to have to go out and eat it all.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't know how that that tier of, you know, in command, that you're saying, well, you go and do the navigation and I'll go do the hydroponics. Well, I feel like doing the hydroponics. You do the navigation. I mean, I'm sorry. Somebody's got to kind of be sort of in charge somewhere in the line, you know. Like having a roommate.
Here's a website for you. womenofsciencefiction.com.
Sweet.
Yep. It's got new stuff in there, some books that are out by Amy J. Murphy and Kay Gorman. Let me see here. Mission. They have a mission. Bringing women who love sci-fi together with women who create it. Aha. You should put some historical stuff on here, though, because that's what I would want to learn about the early days, like we learned here on this show about Forey's first girlfriend being practically the mother of dressing up for sci-fi cons.
He was one of the first
things. Oh, yeah,
full-fledged cosplay.
Yes. She practically invented it, or you might as well say she did. Yep.
Yeah, and according to what I found here on the good old search engine, the first, besides Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, which is kind of sort of, as you mentioned, sci-fi, but not quite. Let's see. They're going back and forth. Well, they're not giving me a good answer. I don't think anybody knows. I think they're still saying it's Mary Shelley, but I'm of the opinion it's got to be somebody else.
What, as far as the first woman to write sci-fi?
Yes.
I would say she's highly credited, at least the first celebrated, because although Frankenstein is horror, there's a lot of science fiction in there with just his creation, the monsters.
Yeah.
History of women in sci-fi isn't what you think. A little article I found here. Conventional wisdom holds that science fiction was written almost exclusively by men until the advent of feminism in the 60s and 70s. But when Lisa Yazek, who teaches sci-fi studies at Georgia Tech, went digging through old magazines, she discovered a very different story. Uh-huh. And she talks about feminist science fiction. In fact, women writers were relatively common throughout the pulp era. Who knew? And the proportion of women readers was even higher. At least 15% of the science fiction community were women. Women producers, and reading polls suggest that 40 to 50% of the readers were women. So there were always a lot of women in the game. They always hid from me. They always thought it was silly. Your space movies and monster movies are so silly. No, they're not. They're cool.
Let's see. There is a mention of an author by the name of, I don't know if I'm going to mess up her name, Begum Rokeya.
Sure.
And he wrote in around 1908. Something called Sultana's Dream.
There you go.
It's a fantasy.
Well, in 1 minute, you can get on over to them Twitches, and catch Gar the Ghoul with Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Gar the Ghoul.
You can find that link over on them Facebooks, and we will be back next week with radio and stuff. Real quick, it's, Actor's Life. And we're going to have Blondie and all kinds of fun stuff. See you then.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it! I can dig it, man! I can dig it.
Cool, man. Totally cool.
Later. I forgot we were live until I hear 90 seconds. I'm like, whoa.
You're just kind rolling along.
No, I was enjoying the conversation with the two of you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
BW, thank you so much for bringing our attention to this story.
Oh, not at all. Thank you for airing it. I mean, I really appreciate
it's good.
That. I'm just, you know, I mean, I don't want to, you know, roll over your rodeo. This is your horse, your rodeo, your clown,
yeah, but
your
you're
circus.
Part of the team, and your contributions are greatly appreciated, including sharing a story like this with us tonight. I mean, anything you, your expertise in certain areas, we just love it, and that's how you kind of got adopted, man.
yeah.
Cool.
Because of your knowledge, because of your knowledge, yes.
Yeah, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
And wonderful demeanor, too.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. You know, it's always, you know, keep a nice, calm, cool, polite demeanor, and they never notice that axe you're wheeling behind you. So there
exactly.
You are.
You want to sneak up on them. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Kind of segueing to the buzzsaw. It's, you know, just, you know, sorry, oh no, that's nothing. Just you know, ignore that sound behind the curtain. Buzzsaw.
Ooh, Blondie.
Oh yeah, let's bring on the Dagwood sandwich.
That's next week, Theater 5, Suspense with Milton Berle. All right.
Yeah.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater comes back for the next two Saturdays. Yay.
Yeah.
Cool. Uncle Milty himself.
Uncle Milty himself,
probably.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think he had the longest running contract with a television show with NBC. His contract ran for, I think, I don't know, even...
Ever.
Yeah, it was supposedly, like Bob Hope's on NBC, pretty much a... supposedly a lifetime contract.
There was somebody put up, I found it on YouTube, Lugosi visited Milton Berle's show and dressed up naturally as Dracula. And
really?
It was weird. Yeah. It was put up recently, and I'm like, oh, my God. I've never seen this footage before. Because there's not a whole lot of Lugosi on TV and film. I have some... snippets we used to throw in on Creepy Castle TV.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, have you seen the one with Betty Boop and Lugosi?
Doesn't hit me. I think I've seen it, but I don't really remember anything about it.
It's not Helen Kane. It was that woman that there was some legal stuff with Helen Kane.
Was it Freddie Washington? I don't know. She was. I don't know.
Betty
Boop off. You know.
Yeah. And there's of course the footage of him going to the, getting help with his issue.
Yeah.
And coming out.
Oh, yeah. Now it's not even newsworthy.
Do you think if he would have done television, if it would have been offered to him? I don't think it was really offered to him.
Well, he did a few things. There were a few. He appeared with. Abbott and Costello, I'm sure, on television. Where else have I seen him? Hold on. Let me look through my library here because I got some.
Did he do any commercials?
But not that I know of. Not that I've seen.
Huh.
Which would have been interesting. I could see him doing those septic sticks. You know, remember those old things that would burn your face off, Dave? The septic sticks that you use for shaving,
no.
You cut yourself shaving, it was this stick.
Oh,
it was
okay,
like a,
okay.
And it burned like hell, but it stopped the bleeding.
Oh, it's like cauterizing yourself in the Old West. Get a bullet to bite on and just get a hot iron. And
it's very similar, I'm sure. God. Short subjects? No. I have it somewhere. Bella. I had a whole bunch of Bella.
It's too bad that a clothing manufacturer didn't didn't tap him on the shoulder because before he started getting ill, you know, he cut quite the dapper claw, dapper figure, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I hadn't thought
about
that.
He was on the Red Skelton
right.
show. He was on the Red Skelton show. I think with Vampira, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that was Lon Chaney Jr. with Vampira.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
I know that Lawrence Karloff and
Lon
Vincent
Chaney
Price
Jr.
did Red
was
Skelton.
On with Red Skelton.
Right. He was on with Red Skelton and Vampira.
Mm. Yep. I know Boris Karloff and Vincent Price did a Red Skelton skit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was like later, I think, in the color years.
Yeah, that
yes,
was color years.
It is colorized.
Yep.
No, it wasn't colorized. It was filmed in color, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. That must have been
It
expensive.
Was actually really color, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And what else did I see? Cool. Go see on TV? Just a couple things. They allude to him doing some television in the Ed Wood movie. And he did. He would. He struggled with TV. He struggled with it.
Hmm.
I don't know. Were there any other actors? Were there any other actors who did well who had heavy accents? Then you had the Latin lover types, but not even you know. Ricardo Montalban had a very smooth voice, so that didn't really get in his way. I'm trying to think of who else, but who?
Yeah, British
accent
doesn't count because that's too close to American English.
Yeah, it's too
yeah,
Anglo.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there's somebody else who I think but he was the guy from the Magnificent Seven, but he. Yul Brynner, yeah, he was Turkish by birth, but he got rid of his accent. Horst Buchholz, he was one of the Magnificent Seven, but he got rid of his German accent or nullified it. And what was the name of the guy? Did anyone remember that show called Rat Patrol?
Yeah.
Yes.
The guy who was always chasing after the American Jeep Patrol. His real name was Hans Guntergast, but he later went on to soap operas and changed his name to Eric Braden because he couldn't get any real work. He was also in the Night Stalker, the werewolf episode on that cruise ship.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes, that was him.
Oh, okay. I know exactly who you're talking about. He was on that was the guy that was on Bold and the Beautiful?
Yeah, Bold and the Beautiful.
Or Young and the
Young
Restless.
And
the
Restless.
One or the other.
Young
and the Restless. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was him. And he's German, but he really worked on getting rid of his accent, but he changed his name because his name wasn't getting him any work, so he changed it. But I guess for the most part, the only actor that I can think of that really hit it big with heavy accents before we were more accepting was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't think of anybody else. Offhand.
Turhan Bay? No, he spoke well, actually. Yeah, probably there's probably quite a few Latin American or Latin actors.
Yeah.
Babalu.
Oh, yes, of course, Desi Arnaz. There's Desi Arnaz. And there were a lot of them in the silent era. But
Marlena Dietrich, for Christ's sake, how could we forget Marlena
Dietrich?
Oh, for
gosh sakes, thank you. Hello.
Duh.
Oh, and Greta Garbo, but she had, and Don't Be Stingy, Baby. That was the first talk she ever did. And Marlena Dietrich. Marlena Dietrich.
Yeah. Oh, I love when, what's her name, imitated her.
Madeline Kahn.
Oh, my God. Madeline Kahn was a genius at everything she did.
Oh, God.
She was awesome. Very talented lady.
Oh, now I shall sing for you the song that closed Poland.
Jesus. That movie was so politically incorrect, which made it great.
It's great.
There's
I mean,
just...
that was... way before South Park.
Never going to be
Park.
Another Mel Brooks. Only he can make a musical. He can't do that today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. No. Only he could make a musical about the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh yeah.
And Hitler on Ice.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Sieg Heil for Hitler und Germany.
Yep. Great stuff. Oh my gosh. There's just never going to be another like him. Him.
Oh yeah.
Don Rickles. Yeah. It's over.
Yeah, he did the producers with that song. You know,
yes.
When they did
yes.
that horrible play that they were sure was going to be a bomb, but it was a smash hit. It was Dick Shawn who was playing this hip beatnik character
in the original. Then he turned it into a musical. And it's funny because I always thought, man, Mel, why are you doing this? You had such a classic movie. Why would you ruin it by trying to make it? And I tell you what, it's absolutely wonderful. It is absolutely wonderful. Both versions, either one.
He loves musicals, and it kind of makes sense because a lot of his films have great musical routines in them.
You know, he was a drummer, and the reason it was because. Got to make a lot of noise. The drummer drew a lot of attention when he got a little loud.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever hear
he
was
him
on,
always having to move?
Yeah, I don't think he ever could stay still. Did you ever hear of him? He was on some talk show. I forgot what it was, and he was regaling when he was a soldier in World War II, and they had nothing. He and another guy had nothing to do, so they just target practice on the porcelain caps that were on these poles, and they were bullseyeing them and just shooting out. And then they got word from the commanding officer, all of our communications are out. They didn't realize those little porcelain caps were the things that you put on the wires to run the wires through to get the signals through. And he and his friend were bullseyeing them, and they said, "We'll volunteer and see who did it, sir."
That is too funny.
Yeah, so they were. Yeah.
God, that is too funny.
And I had no idea that To Be or Not to Be, that was a remake of a Jack Benny movie.
Yeah, and the Jack Benny, and I went back and watched the Jack Benny, and it really wasn't a bad movie. But he got to do the whole film with his wife, and I think that's one of the reasons he wanted to do that film.
Oh, yeah.
Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he and Anne Bancroft. I think it's the only movie they ever did together. He did produce The Elephant Man, where his wife was in that movie as well, but he didn't act in there with her. He just produced the movie.
And I can't find. I had a whole bunch of little videos of Lugosi, and I was trying to find them for you guys. Oh, there's a good one from the 30s or early 40s. He did an interview. He was dressed real nice, and it was just like an interview with a news person.
Cool.
There's that out there, too. Just play that on the channel.
Well, kids, you can keep going, but I'm going to have to book off here for the night. I'm sorry. Going on around the house here, so I'm going to have to book off here.
No worries. We can drag out the schnoz.
Oh, please do. Without further ado, Mr. Durante.
Didn't mean to cut it off. Sorry.
No worries.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say
good night.
Billy Day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
It's horrible what we say, and it could think you do. Good night. Good night.
Don't get mad at me for the second.
Good night.
Uh-oh. A little lengthy.
Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
I can't stop myself.
I love a good practical joke. You know, this whole thing started when my crazy buddy Melvin hooked a smoke bomb to my car. Bluey. Boy, I love a good practical joke. So after I pick up the hood of the car and throw it in the trunk, I whip over to the post office to drop off the package for Melvin. Boy, what a package. Took me 3 hours to get the Excelsior wadded in just right so you wouldn't know there was a live cobra inside. Boy, was he surprised. I love a good practical joke. Next day, I hear from Melvin with a bang. I guess he was pretty sore about that snake because in the middle of the night, he paints out the white line on the road that goes past my house. And he paints another one right up my driveway through the living room and pow! I hear this big noise and there's this diesel truck roaring through my backyard wearing my bathtub for a radiator cap. I love a good practical joke. And you know Melvin's nuts about golf. So I sneak over to where he plays and I grab his golf bag out of the locker. Get this, I cut holes in all the balls and I hollow them out and I fill them up with nitroglycerin. Boy! What a drive! Pow! All of a sudden, from hole 1 to 18, one big sand trap. But I didn't stay one up on old Melvin Long, boy. Oh, what a mad cat he is. He gets this lion out of the zoo, and he shaves off all the mane, and he chains it up out and back to Rover's house. Lucky I caught the gag before the lion caught me. Too bad about the mailman, though. I love a good practical joke. You know, Melvin uses an electric razor, and here I am hooking high-tension wires from the third rail on the train track that runs by where he lives. When he comes home to shave with 6,000 volts. Boy, will he be burning. Hey, what's that green smoky stuff coming in under the door? Poison gas. Man, that Melvin done it again. Matt, I love a good practical joke.